About a month ago, the city of New York repealed their cabaret law, which banned dancing in any place that didn't have a license. It was enacted in 1926, a year after the Charleston craze swept the speakeasies of Harlem and was enforced mainly to suppress gatherings that police found undesirable. Not surprisingly, the New York City cabaret law made an indelible mark on music history. The effects of the law were far-reaching. Licenses were expensive and hard to get. Other than in about 100 legal New York cabarets, a club faced fines if a patron decided to get up and dance. And they were only allowed a maximum of 3 musicians. It wasn't just establishments that were targeted either. Musicians needed a cabaret license to play clubs. This meant having a clean police record, which can be problematic. Some of the greatest luminaries of jazz, Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, Chet Baker, Billie Holiday, went through periods of not being able to gig in their own town. It also meant being fingerprinted. For years, Frank Sinatra refused to play New York City because he wouldn't suffer the indignity. Even the musical instruments themselves were discriminated against. Piano, organ, accordion, and stringed instruments were legal. But in an overt diss against jazz, drums and horns were banned. Musical styles have been affected as people found ways to work within or around the law. The city fostered a legacy of jazz in the form of piano bass or guitar bass duos. At the other end of the spectrum, raves in illicit warehouse spaces were the birthplace of extreme EDM styles like acid house. But this has all become music history as New Yorkers start dancing in the open. For KMUW, I'm Mark Foley.
And we welcome you into Musical Space. I'm Fletcher Powell here, as always, with Mark Foley. Hey, Mark.
Hi, thanks for having me, Fletcher.
Yeah, and you brought along a listening list today of a number of musicians, I guess, who were affected by this cabaret law in New York City.
Right, and this is just an excuse. Anytime I can research jazz in New York City, I'm gonna jump on it. So, yeah, this law was just repealed on Halloween Day of this year. And so we get to talk about New York jazz musicians.
Do you know what took so long for it to be repealed, and why did it happen now?
Well, I think there was just kind of up and down about this law. A lot of the administration really liked the law. Like Rudy Giuliani used it as an excuse to really clamp down on some like clubs that he didn't particularly like. It was part of his whole clean up Times Square kind of thing. So. But now, I think, thanks to a couple club owners, they finally got this thing repealed. So,
well, let's go ahead and get things moving along. We heard the Charleston there just a little bit ago from the Paul Whiteman Orchestra.
Right, one of the biggest radio orchestras of the time.
And let's keep going with Billie Holiday.
Yeah, I can't believe anyone would have the audacity to not allow her to sing in New York City. But yeah, it happened. But this is a really early recording of her singing a tune called I'm Gonna Lock My Heart. It was recorded in 1939 at a place called Cafe Society in Greenwich Village, which happens to be the first racially integrated nightclub in the United States. But yeah, check this out. It's a beautiful tune.
If I never fall in love again, that's soon enough for me. I'm gonna lock my heart and throw away the key.
Billie Holiday there, continuing just some of the biggest names in jazz who were affected by this cabaret law, Charlie Parker.
I know, you would think that he would be a national treasure. They should have given him the key to the city. but here he is playing live at a place called the Royal Roost, which was a chicken shack somewhere in Manhattan. And somebody convinced them to get a piano in there and start doing bebop, and it turned into be this huge thing. And there's this recording from 1948 of Charlie Parker playing Groovin' High. You can hear Miles Davis, a very young Miles Davis, playing on this track. He's probably playing hooky from his duties at Juilliard School to be there. Groovin' High.
Still moving along, biggest names in jazz, golly, Thelonious Monk.
I know, yeah. This is a tune called In Walked Bud, which is a tune that he wrote about Bud Powell, one of my favorite pianists. So this one was recorded at the Five Spot, another real amazing jazz place, which actually had a cabaret license, which they got just after they opened in 1956. And this was one of the big hipster hangouts of the beatniks. Artists like Willem de Kooning hung out there, Allen Ginsberg, people like that. Check out the tenor solo by Johnny Griffin. It's just amazing.
Thank you.
Something else that I found really interesting here was that three musician rule that you were talking about. There are a number of artists who figured ways around that, though.
Right. Yeah. And you know, if you just scratch the surface a little bit, just do some YouTubing, you'll find all this amazing stuff of either a guitar player and bass player or a piano player and a bass player. This was kind of the way that most clubs did it. And, you know, it'd be like a piano bar kind of situation, but, you know, it's New York City, so all these players are just amazing. This is a guitarist, I don't know if you've heard of him, Gene Bertoncini. He's one of my heroes. I actually got to hear him once with this bass player, Michael Moore, who's also one of my heroes. And they're playing this tune, Cherokee, which is kind of a standard of the big, you know, the big combos, which you would think of as a really, really fast number, real, you know, drums would be driving this thing, but we don't have any drums. So we've got this duo keeping the time on their own. And another interesting thing about this is the guitar is a nylon string classical guitar. So it's like the opposite of a loud, you know, horn band. I love the sound of this, and no laws are broken here.
And then, of course, it wasn't just standard jazz musicians who were affected by the cabaret laws and everything. You talked about the Fania All-Stars.
Yeah, right. I wanted to get into some other styles. And this is one of my favorite salsa bands. Salsa itself is a term, it's kind of an umbrella term that puts together a lot of, you know, various Latin styles. And this band, Fania All-Stars, they're named after the Fania record label, which was one of the first salsa labels. And this was recorded live at a place called the Cheetah, which was a discotheque. I'm assuming they had a cabaret license since you could dance at a disco. But this was the very first place that New York salsa, in quotes, was performed. So this is a tune called Descarga Fania, live at the Cheetah, 1971. Oye, que rico suena, las estrellas de Fania. Oye, que rico suena, las estrellas de Fania. Oye, que rico suena, las estrellas de Fania.
And And to finish things off, you mentioned illicit warehouse raves going on in New York City.
Right, yeah. Kind of outside my social milieu. But anyway, this was happening in New York City along with some other towns. I don't know, maybe house music was more famously from Detroit and Chicago. But New York definitely had a scene, and it was definitely underground because of this law. And this is a tune by a guy named Danny Tenaglia, who was a big DJ in New York City. This album, Hard and Soul, from 1995, has this tune, Bottom Heavy. It's an example of tribal house, which was kind of a thing that was happening in New York City in the rave scene at the time.
And we'll take it out with that. Everybody listening in New York City, you can dance now. So congratulations.
All right. Kick up your heels.
Thanks, Mark, as always.
Thanks, Fletcher.
And for KMUW, I'm Fletcher Powell.